Blog Talk Radio.
Cause that's just how we do it. Welcome to the war room. We got Dev, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the Hot Block Commander.
How you wanna end a 1 or 2 hour show to get your brain running with the premise of talk sports on a national level? Move with the topic, sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five doing prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine, sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26, so the war in Kuwait. It's the war room with 5 knights at the round table. 5 Philly guys, diversified and educated.
Yes, sir. Sipping on that. Yes, sir. All right, everybody. It's Thursday, December Deuce Deuce 2011. And we're with you for another 2 hours of action-packed sports talk. You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports. I'm Devin McMillan, and I'm at the round table with the industry's best sports yappers, Akil Bayon, Jimmy Williams, and B. Austin, the Hot Block Commander. We got a great rundown for you tonight. We're going to discuss last week's quarterback matchup in Denver, the Packers' loss, the Dream Team's playoff hopes, and the start of the NBA season. We want to hear from you guys tonight, so get in that JW Philly Realty chat room at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom, or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports. You can also call us on the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline at 323-410-0012 and let your voice be heard. Quick shout-out and holiday wishes to our Philly radio partners, Roy and Chris of the Broad Street Line. Check them out on their new day and time of Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Blog Talk Radio. Also, if you haven't signed our joint petition to bring back Big Shot to the Philadelphia 76ers, please get to our website and do so. The petition has gotten crazy attention, but not enough signatures. So sign, people. Everybody's spreading the word, but they're forgetting to sign when they're spreading the word. So sign and then spread. Sign and then spread. All right, but y'all know the show must go on. So without further ado, my partner, the Blueprint, is going to let us know who's having a birthday.
My birthday, yay!
What's up, good brothers?
What up?
Yo, make sure that chat room is open, by the way. I'm sitting there, you know, make sure that chat room is open.
Yeah, I'm telling people to get in there, and it's not even open. I got
it. Yeah, I'm talking about we keep it very real on here. It's not even open yet. We're telling you to get in. Anyway, the birthdays are brought to you by Days of Beauty Hair Salon, which is located at 9221 Oxon Hill Road in Fort Washington, Maryland. Ask for Lisa because she can take care of you because some of your women are walking around in the holiday season, not looking too well, you know, so she'll tighten you up. First birthday I want to talk about is one, Tyrell Biggs, who turns 51.
It's my birthday, yay!
Yes, when I say Tyrell Biggs, what do you think of?
Man, it's a sad thing, but when I think of the name Tyrell Biggs, even though he's from Philly, so, you know, I just give a brother props from being from Philly. Actually, the whole birthday thing tonight got like a little Philly flavor to it, but when I think of Tyrell Biggs, man, all you can think of is him getting beat up by Mike Tyson in that title fight.
I mean, yeah, Tyson,
they had to stop the joint after 7 rounds, and the thing about it is he was talking a lot of smack going into the fight. So Tyson, after the fight, told I'm assuming it was probably Larry Merchant back then, he told him, yeah, I kind of carried him for a few rounds so I can dish out more punishment because of the trash he was talking before the fight. See, that's when Mike was good enough to do that kind of stuff. You know, later on, he was trash truck dude. But that's all I think of when I think of Tyrell Biggs, man, getting beat up.
Tyson went ham to sell on him and beat him something terrible. But, you know, he still was talking his trash. That's what we do. We from Philly. So,
yeah,
be Austin. Be Austin. What you got there, brother?
I'm going to go with when I think of Tyrell Biggs, first I think of Mike Tyson moving his jaw over a little bit while his head stayed in place. And I think about his nickname being Styrofoam.
Yeah, that
definitely was his nickname. For those who don't know, though, the thing about him, he was like a hellified. I remember hearing about him in terms of playing basketball coming up. They said he was a great basketball player high school-wise.
Yeah, he ran ball with like Gene Banks.
They said he had major. He was 6'5", but, you know, he went into boxing. Doc Bay, what you got?
Yo, the sad thing is, even though homie was from Philly,
And he was, like, the top contender for many years, although he never won a title. All I can remember is, like, Tyson ending his career. It was kind of like after he lost to Tyson, like, that was it. Like, I mean, he still had fights, but it seemed like his name just went like, so.
It's like a video game. Yeah, so shout out to him on his birthday. It's amazing how we give him a shout out, and it seems like we just talked about Mike Tyson for 5 minutes. Yeah, but no. Anyway. Yeah, shout out to him. Next birthday.
Get beat up.
Steve Norman Carlton would have turned 67. Rest
Yay!
In peace, homie. My opinion real quick, that is the greatest Phillies pitcher of all time. I don't know if you agree with me or not, but let's see. B. Austin.
I'm not really that familiar with his body of work. I just remember he had a little bit of heat with him. Well, I wasn't really into the baseball thing. I do remember him. He had some heat with him.
It's all good. It's all good.
I was a Doc Gooden fan.
Yeah, because
you probably served him.
Yo.
He kept my lights on.
No, I'm with you, Jimmy. I don't even think it's close. Steve Carlton is the best Phillies pitcher of all time. We might get a little flack from that if we bring on our Philly baseball contributor, Brent Easley, because, you know, he's a holiday stand. So as soon as he signed, he didn't have to throw a pitch. He probably already took Steve Carlton's his place in Philly lore. But I think Carlton may have won, anybody out there, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he won like 4 Cy Youngs, something like that.
Yeah.
Come on, man. They don't do that in Philly.
Yeah, he won 4. Yep.
Yeah, they don't do that in Philly.
I'm going to keep it funky, yo. Coming up as a kid, my favorite pitcher was Shane Raleigh. He wasn't that good, but he was the best the Phillies had. He was the best
the
Phillies had.
I was about
had,
to say,
bro.
We, in our day, you know, because Carlton was even a little before our day. In our day, who do we have besides Shane?
Yeah, you ain't never
like,
lied.
My favorite
Bay,
pitcher was
saying?
Bird.
Yeah, I was going to say, first of all, I want to give a shout-out to Doc Gooden.
I don't know, man. I was banging 7-gram rocks and finishing them because that's how I roll. I have one speed. I have one gear. Go.
All right, shout out. All right, now, with Steve Carlton, yeah, you can say he's arguably the best left-handed pitcher ever in the history of baseball. And it's sad that, you know, people may think we're homers for saying that, but, you know, 4 Cy Youngs, you know, let find somebody else who's won 4 Cy Youngs that was a lefty. So shout out to Carlton.
And his nickname was Lefty, so he personifies lefties. You can't call yourself Lefty. You're getting stoned.
No doubt. Yeah, so shout out to him. Rest in peace on his birthday. The next one is Cornelius McGillicuddy Sr.
Hey, nah, he's still...
Connie Mack. My man Cornelius McGillicuddy, a.k.a. Connie Mack.
Connie Mack. Connie Mack wasn't the first out the limo. But Connie Mack was, I mean, like I said, man, I told you, it had some Philly flair to this because, you know, he managed the Philadelphia A's for the club's first 50 seasons. He retired at age 87. And, you know, we all know that they used to have Connie Mack Stadium in Philly, which is a pretty famous place. So, I mean, you know where the man stands in at least Philadelphia history if they name a stadium after you. So, rest in peace to Connie Mack.
Yeah, rest in peace to him. Doc Bay, you got anything?
Yeah, all I want to say is my pop used to always talk about Connie Mack Stadium, Connie Mack Stadium, Connie Mack Stadium. So that's all I really remember about Connie Mack is Connie Mack Stadium in Philly.
Yo, did the Eagles win their championships at Connie Mack Stadium?
Oh, I want to say so.
Back in the Dizzy.
Damn!
Yo, all I know is my man played for the Washington Nationals in 1886.
Maybe he was the first out of the limo.
Yo, real quick, is Steve Carlton still alive?
Yeah,
Steve Carlton's
alive.
Still alive.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because I was reading something that said he had passed. I'm like, rest in peace. I was reading something that said he passed. I'm like, yo, Steve Carlton is only like in his 60s.
Oh, I thought
you
said rest in peace to Connie Mack.
Yeah, we know Connie Mack is gone. Connie Mack was born in back in the 1800s. But
Charlie's nephew.
Yo, so I apologize for anybody who thinks that we tried to kill off Steve Carlton in the war room. We didn't do that. I was reading online.
Connie Mack was dead before Steve Carlton was born.
I was just reading online, and I made a mistake. I didn't try to kill off Steve Carlton or nothing. So shout out to you, Steve Carlton, and don't be pissed at us. Anyway, last birthday I want to talk about, let's keep it Philadelphia, is one Bradley Thomas Lidge, who turns 35.
Yay!
Kill.
I guess you could say a pitcher that helped the Phillies win a World Series, and also a pitcher that helped the Phillies not win a couple of World Series the last 2 years due to his inconsistency. So that's all I got.
Yeah, man. Props to Lidge for the streak he had in that 2008 season. I think he was like 42 for 42 on saves.
Man,
when he picks up the ball to come in for a save, man, it's like the scariest 5 minutes of your life, and you really don't know, you know, if he's gonna get it done or not. So I'm kind of glad that the Phillies went and bought themselves a closer. But like I said, props to Lidge for what he did in 2008.
Yeah, no doubt. Shout out to him. He's a free agent at this point. Did he sign with anybody yet?
Give me my name back, because he's not using it right.
Well, he want a chip off of it. You got to live times, bro.
Look, that's exactly it. When it comes to closer, that's what you're going to have, good times and bad times. I mean, you look at Mariano Rivera, and, you know, as great as he is, he gave the Red Sox that chip when he blew the save, so it is what it is. But he's won a lot of chips, too. So, anyway, those are the birthdays for this week. Again, those birthdays are brought to you by Days of Beauty Hair Salon. Go get your wig split right, Dev. Tell everybody what happened while you were on the grind.
All right, everybody. While you were on the grind is brought to you by PhillyAutoDesign.com. Just visit WarRoomSports.com. Go to our sponsors and partners page, and you can click right on the Philly Auto Design logo. You can have at it with all the rims and tire selection you need. So while y'all were on the grind this week, first thing I want to talk about is the New York Knicks. As everybody knows, the Garden has gone through a much-needed, if I might add, a much-needed renovation. I've been in the Garden a few times, and that place is a dump. You know, it's one of those overrated New York things. But the Knicks have increased their courtside disabled ticket prices by 900%. The prices have gone from $300 to $2,850. These are for handicapped seats, y'all. Now, the average ticket price, you know, throughout the whole Garden jumped by about 50%, but they hit the handicapped people up front for 900%, man. Y'all got any thoughts on that?
Handicapped people, though? Seriously?
I need to holler at my attorney, Dewey Cheatham. I think we got a class action coming.
900%. I mean, I think that's all in. They're probably trying to really, this is my opinion, this is speculation. I think they're probably trying to get rid of courtside disabled seats, because who's going to pay that? You know, unless you like Chill from Groovy Chill. Who's going to pay that price? You know, I don't get it. I just 900%.
Yo,
that's a lot of money, man.
Let you like chill. Yeah, that's
man. Like, I couldn't think anymore. You know, disabled people who might be able to afford $2,850 for a Knicks game, and he not even working that much. So I don't know if Chill can afford that. That's crazy.
Yo, that is crazy. It's like Austin said, it's gonna be a class action coming. You can't do that, man. You could hit the handicap up for 900%. Come on.
Yeah,
well,
I mean, because you know,
Knicks are back.
Yeah, exactly. The Knicks are back. They got a new product on the
Knicks
court.
Knicks are back.
And they've renovated the Garden. Yeah. Like I said, I don't know how much. I mean, they put a lot of money into it, but I don't know how much you can do. Because this is like the third Garden renovation in our lifetime. Like, how much can you keep doing to the same building? I know it's in historic and everything, but let them play somewhere else for a year or two. Knock it down and rebuild it in the same spot. Stop trying to renovate.
Indubitably, this will be viewed as a travesty. and I can't think of any more $10 words, but, you know, shout out to my man Clyde Walton.
Yo, Clyde is crazy. All right, so we're going to the next story. This is a feel-good story, especially with this dude, because usually everything we talk about with this guy is something boneheaded. Braylon Edwards, he gave 79 students $10,000 apiece for college. Now, when he was a rookie back in 05 in Cleveland, he'd announced that he'd give 10 grand in scholarships to 100 area 8th graders if they graduated high school with a GPA over 2.5 and 15 hours community service. So of that 100 that he promised it to, 79 of them graduated with the, you know, with the right criteria. So he lived up to his word, even though he's only making $1 million base salary this year. You know, he paid out that $1 million, and he added laptops and school supplies for the incoming freshmen going to schools all over the country, mostly in Ohio, but, you know, you had a few of them go other places. Jimmy, what do you think about this philanthropic effort by your man Braylon?
I mean, it was a good story to read, considering most of the time we hear anything about an NFL player, it always has a negative connotation. Someone's arrested, someone beat their wife or something. So it was a good story to hear. But not trying to be smart, but he probably didn't think that many students would achieve what he set out there. You know, I bet you next time he's going to make the GPA a little bit higher. He's going to ask for like a 3.9 or something.
Yo, actually, he didn't. He and his mom, who's, you know, she started the program with him, they kind of admitted that. Because the high school graduation rate period in Cleveland, in Cleveland public schools, is only 50%. So they didn't expect 79% of these students to get a 2.5 or above, because only 50% of these cats end up graduating. So they didn't think that, but, you know, he lived up to it. You know, he manned up, he paid up. Austin, you got any thoughts on Braylon?
I think Braylon fronts a lot. Like, he likes to fit a certain image. This dude is actually pretty articulate and pretty intelligent. You know, so I usually trash him when I get the chance for being a noodle. So, you know, shout out to you for doing something positive with your riches. I mean, you might as well have said you paid that 49ers money that you stole, since they gave you $1 million and you only played 4 games.
Bayon, you got anything? You got something. I know you're in education. I know you got something to say about the man Braylon.
Yeah, the first thing I thought about when, you know, I did the math on that, I was like, hold up, man, that's a lot of cheese. That might be like his base salary from last year or something. So he basically donated his whole salary philanthropically to advance education. Now, I think, I mean, he definitely took a hit, but he definitely probably changed the lives of probably 79 kids who may not have went to college or may have done other things or may not have achieved the academic success had they not had that $10,000 carrot out there. So shout out to Braylon Edwards for doing good for the society.
Right, you're right, because they interviewed a few of them, and a couple of them said that themselves. Like, I wouldn't even be here if it wasn't for Braylon. So like you said, he dangled the carrot, so he gave him motivation. And, you know, after the motivation, he still gave him, you know, $10,000, I don't really know how far it's going to take you and, you know, university prices these days, but it's a start. So, you know, they need to take that start and try to do something with it. It's a good story. So that's what's up, Braylon. So this next story, man, this one is kind of difficult. We're all from Philly. So this is a guy we used to read every day when we had the newspaper in high school. Long time Philly Daily News Hall of Fame sports writer Bill Conlon, accused of child molestation. He's actually accused, now two more people came out, so he's accused of molesting 5 underage girls and 1 underage boy back in the 70s, and their ages range from like 7 to 12 years old. Kill, I know you used to have the paper under your arm a lot coming in. I mean, you probably was reading your own box scores, but I know you're familiar with Bill, man. What did you think?
I know, right? Yo, the first thing I thought about when I heard this was, remember that dude, Uncle Eddie, that they talked about in Philly that was, like, molesting boys?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. Like, I wonder if they were connected. I wonder if they had some kind of ring going on. And I know Eddie, I think he got put away. So, you know, it's just sad, especially after the whole Sandusky situation in Syracuse, Ernie Fine. I guess kids or people that know stuff are just starting to come out the woodworks and be like, yo, look, this happened in 77, this happened in 82, this happened in 95. And it's just sad that, you know, you have these kind of guys out here. Hey, parents, man, watch your kids and be very vigilant, because it's It's hard to trust people nowadays.
I think I read that in Pennsylvania, though, that the statute of limitations has passed for him to get into any real trouble. But, of course, he's hired a lawyer. He's resigned from the Philadelphia Daily News, and he's, like, vehemently denying these charges. And it's weird because he doesn't have the Sandusky pattern, you know, because he was molesting little girls, but there was one little boy in the mix. And
yeah,
it's just crazy. Austin, what were you about to say?
So, like, he wanted to see whether he was a fruit and was like, nah, I'll stick to the other side of the tracks?
No, I don't know. I don't know. Because I don't – I mean, of course, you don't understand why these men would be molesting children, period. But, you know, of all the cases that we've heard recently, like, what's the fascination with men molesting little boys? Like, come on, I'm – you know, of course, I'm not saying they shouldn't molest little girls. Shouldn't be doing that to anybody, but
It's crazy because I did grow up like reading his columns, and you know, it's sad to see. And I do remember Uncle Ed, what was his name, Ed Savage, killed when we was young, boy, the bull from Philly, Ed Savage or whatever. So I didn't even put that connection together. I just think that Sandusky is dropping bombs on everybody. He's exposing everybody in that lifestyle because out of the blue, you know, cats is getting taken down. So, you know, it is what it is. More probably will come.
All right, well, this last story is not about child molestation, but it's about something similar, sexual harassment. Your boy Monte Ellis out in Golden State is being sued by a former Golden State Warriors employee. She filed a sexual harassment lawsuit on Wednesday alleging that Ellis sent her a lot of unwanted texts that included a FAR photo. And, you know, if you don't know what we talk about when we say a FAR photo, he sent a picture of his genitalia to the young lady. I don't know, I was reading up on this story, and it's a lot of back and forth because the club seems to think it was consensual. Of course, his wife seems to think that the woman initiated it. She even stepped to her before at a home game, like pushed her up against the wall with her purse. So it's a lot of stuff going on. Did y'all read anything on it? What's your thoughts?
I just know that his wife is gully. I've seen her in interviews before. She's like a – I think she's an attorney.
I think
one of
be a cop or a security guard.
No, matter of fact, no, she is a cop. She is a cop. You're right. She is a cop. Because she definitely is a cop. So his wife is gully. She don't play no games. I've seen her in interviews and look like she run that whole household.
She's probably older. She's
Jackie
probably older
Christie.
Than him. She got her Jackie Christie on. Yo, on that note, I wonder how Doug Christie feels when he looks at that show. Like, how?
He feels normal. That's their normal life. He's a noodle. But how are we talking about Doug Christie?
I don't know, man. I reserve judgment because we don't know the whole story. But when did this occur, and how long did it take for this young lady to kind of put this out?
She put it out after he got that $66 million contract.
Interesting. And why did she stay around the Warriors organization if she was, I guess, in a situation where she was under duress or uncomfortable?
And this is her third organization. She's been with the Wizards and one other organization.
I'm
not saying she got fired or anything, but, you know, she might have moved and wanted to keep doing the same kind of job that she was doing. But, you know,
I've been involved with the inner workings of
a few NBA organizations, and this kind of thing isn't out of the ordinary, and it's usually a consensual thing. I'm not speaking on what they're doing out in Golden State, but Austin, you know, we've seen people in Washington, Philly, you know, Atlanta's organization, you know, where employees are actually flirting with the players. And
I think
when it all hits the fan, you know, these kind of accusations come
out. Think that Monte is Han Solo in this, and she's Han's partner.
All right, man. That's what happened while y'all were on the grind. So, Jimmy, let's set it up. Set the court up so we can pass that rock.
You already know it's time to pass the rock. And for those who don't know what pass the rock is, that's on you. But pass the rock is brought to you by Bay Financial Services. For more information on Bay Financial Services, go to our website and look under our sponsors and partners, and you can find more information about them. With that being said, I'm going to bring this rock up. What's up, War Room World?
Tell me why you mad, son.
This is War Room Jimmy, a.k.a. The Blueprint. And this week, I want to talk about something that we have talked about plenty of times in the War Room, but I want to bring it up again. I want to talk about the quick-to-judgment nature of the society we live in. Now, the L.A. Clippers, who have been one of the unluckiest and worst-managed franchises in sports, have built a nice roster. After two preseason wins over the Lakers, people were actually telling me that the Clippers will win the NBA championship. Seriously? After two preseason games? Now, I'm not saying they won't or they will for that matter, but can you make an evaluation of any team after two preseason games? Have we learned nothing from the Eagles and the Dream Team or the Miami Heat with their championship or bust campaign last season? I hope the Clippers actually do well, considering how ugly their past has been. The Clippers' history is as ugly as Sam Cassell and Tyrone Hill combined. But you know what? I have one more point to make, and it has nothing at all to do with the Clippers. But I just want to give a quick gas face to LeBron James. You know why? And I know Austin will have something to say about this, but LeBron James grew up with a single parent under rough financial conditions. Now, you, sir, get the gas face for having the audacity to have new sneaks that cost $1.20 for kid sizes. Not adults, but $1.20 for little kids. Now, I personally have no kids, but I see kids in the inner city who love LeBron James, and their parents have no way to purchase their kids' sneaks that they want because you want to charge $1.20 for, say, a six-year-old to buy your sneaks. You get the gas face, Op. And I'm done for now. And also, I'm nice. And for those who are still sleeping on me, I hope you die in your sleep. I'm going to pass the rock to my man, Dev.
Yo, Jim, this actually proves that we don't talk about this stuff before the show because I planned on talking about the same thing. So real quick, everybody, this might sound a little repetitive, but I've heard myself from several sources in L.A. that the Clippers bandwagon is strong at the moment. And I've personally spoken with people, like Jimmy just said, who were calling them contenders, not after the second preseason game, Jim, after the first preseason game against the Lakers. Now, I understand everything everyone is saying when you map out their lineup and, you know, who they have and their potential and everything, but it is just not in me to make such quick judgments, negative or positive, about anything or anybody in sports. My man Blueprint just gave y'all a list of things that, you know, should have slowed you down from acting this way, but nobody's ever going to listen. You know, we've as a matter of fact, I've blogged about our society's tendency to jump to quick judgment several times before. Like, that's one of my major themes when I blog. But the bandwagon might be right. The Clippers might be on their way to doing something special, but I need to see way more to be on board, just like my man Jimmy the Blueprint said. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and pass that rock to my man Akil Bayon.
I appreciate that. Yeah, watching the Clippers was quite interesting. It was interesting to watch Steve Blake force Chris Paul into a travel, but it caught foul on Steve Blake. Anyway, good evening, War Room aficionados and constituents. I just wanted to take the time to talk about one of the NBA rookies this year out of Cleveland State. Now, you may remember this young man for wearing a 1980s, early 90s style box cut. And this young man averaged 22 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, and 2 steals during his senior year, which included a 41-point, 20 rebound, and 9 assist performance. His name is Norris Cole, and he has the rare combination of handles, passing ability, 3-point shooting ability, mid-range shooting ability, and pure toughness that can lead to an NBA guard having a long career. After watching Cole give out work during the NBA preseason in limited minutes, I became a believer. He averaged 10 points and 5 assists during the preseason, but I felt like he may be the missing piece for the Miami Heat in those crucial situations when they need a bucket from someone other than the big three. After watching Cole on the floor, you could see that he was not in awe of the big three and that he did not mind taking big shots around the big three. I envision Cole hitting crucial shots every now and then when the Heat's offense breaks down or if the Heat need a bucket after going scoreless for several possessions after facing a tough zone defense,
Shout out to the Dallas Mavericks zone defense that slowed the Miami Heat down in the finals. What I found interesting about Norris Cole is that he was the salutatorian of his high school's graduating class, which means he was had the second highest GPA, and he graduated from Cleveland State with a bachelor's degree in health sciences. And one other thing, he is also the cousin of Philadelphia Eagles defensive end Trent Cole. So with that, I will fake the pass back to Dev. I take a dribble between my legs, pull Dev's spin move out on a defender, and then just throw it to B. Austin in the corner.
War Room World, it's that Thursday, and I'm excited. Basketball is back. A couple things I've noticed. Number one, we've already talked about this a little bit, but now having seen game time action, it's even more puzzling and frustrating. We went through a lockout to stimulate competitive balance, so the owners say. That was one of the reasons. And to keep you guys from spending too much money. Yet as I watch the contracts flow, Marcus Thornton has more money than I'll ever make in 1,000 years. Who's Marcus Thornton? I know we talked about it already, but I just pointed that out because he had to be taken to the hospital with a kidney stone. So their investment is already turning a little bad. On another note, I noticed last night that LeBron looked kind of focused for a preseason game. So I wrote a little rhyme. LeBron, why are you trying to go so hard? Knowing in the post, you're easy to guard. In a preseason game, you was going for 40. In the locker room, Wade said, oh, slow up, shorty. Relax and be easy. Going hard in the preseason is sleazy. This is meant for exercise and to holler at the cheerleading breezes. And don't act tough with Q. He played for the Heat. He ain't scared of you. With that, I'll pull up. On a dime, the defender falls into the cameraman. I swish a 16-footer, look real mean at the crowd, and do the Sam Cassell big balls.
Hey, Sammy.
All right, yeah, everybody, Austin, you can. Why Austin decide he want to write a rap, man? You're watching too much of that Slaughterhouse, champ.
I know. That's cool. That's another video for you to chop up, Jim. All right, everybody, you can check out our website at warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report, our weekly newsletter. Click on the Contact Us tab to send us a message about our company, our show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. We have them. If you own a business, you need to get with them while the rates are still low. We will be smelling ourselves pretty soon. All right. So for general inquiries, you can email us at info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing the site, click on the memorabilia tab to buy War Room Sports merchandise, and then click the blog tab to read our latest sports articles in the All Fair and Sports and War blog. Then click the respective icons to like our Facebook page, to follow us on Twitter, to subscribe to our iTunes podcast, to download our free War Room Sports mobile app on your Android or Apple devices, and to watch our YouTube videos at warroomsportstv.com. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom. To get into the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to create an account, just sign in through your Facebook or Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, click follow to make the War Room your favorite Blog Talk Radio show and get updates and reminders about the show. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room every week during the show. So to call in and speak with us, you can dial the Digital Extreme Tech hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. Pressing 1 is like raising your hand, so go ahead and raise your hand, and we might just call on you. So anything going on in the chat room?
Yeah, I'm looking now. We got two people from the War Room family talking about Kill's homie that Kill just talked about, Norris Cole. Yeah, okay. Brandon likes his game as well. Brandon actually wrote a blog about him coming in the league, how good he thought he was going to be, and Iran says he don't think he could be a starter. So, you know, they got both sides of the equation. So we'll see how he pans out, you know, in terms of his game or whatever.
Now they're crapping on him, basically.
You know how not do.
All right, everybody. We're going to get into some hot topics, and hot topics are brought to you by Audible. Is your schedule too hectic to read as much as you want? Well, try audiobooks and kick back and let someone else do the reading for you. All you have to do is visit Audible and sign up for your free trial at audibletrial.com/warroomsports. In no time, you can be listening to the latest bestsellers, hands-free, stress-free, while getting other things done at the very same time. All right, y'all. Ohio State. You know, we talked about their little situation last year with the tattoos and the selling of the merchandise. Jim Tressel, Pryor. The punishment finally came down from the NCAA. So they lost scholarships and a bowl appearance in 2012. Actually, their scholarships go down from 85 to 82, and that's until the 2014-2015 academic year. Under a show clause order, any school that tries to hire Jim Tressel would have to present its case for why they needed to employ him, and they'd risk severe penalties if he were to commit any further infractions. Also, the school must disassociate itself from Terrell Pryor for a period of 5 years. And, of course, the big one, they have a one-year bowl ban. So after the 2012 season, Ohio State can't go to a bowl. What do y'all think? Y'all think this is cool? The punishment is too much, too little? What are your opinions on this?
I think it takes a long time. I done forgot everything about the case at this point. But I think that's crazy that you have to, like, show cause of why you want to hire somebody. Could you imagine that? Like, you trying to get a gig and they have to prove why they need you?
That happened to Todd Bozeman. Todd Bozeman got kicked out of the NCAA from Jason Kidd's time to like 3 years ago for what happened at Cal.
He got the job at Morgan State, right?
Yeah. Then he got the job at Morgan State. So, as soon as it ended, Morgan State hired him.
Yeah. And you see, Morgan State's stock has already risen in the MEAC. So, you know,
yeah, but
being there
like that,
has already
he went
meant
from Cal. He went from Cal to Morgan State. No disrespect to Morgan State, but. Yo, they had to sit out a couple of decades and then go to Morgan State. Like, that's not
you know,
that's
you
not
did,
a quick
you know, out there.
I'm disrespecting Morgan State. That's Kyle versus Morgan State.
Oh. Yeah, what he did, he started working with DC Assault AAU team, so he had some influence on a lot of the, you know, recent NBA, I guess, and college guys that came out of DC, but also he was a pharmaceutical sales rep too.
Want to commit some more violations, but anyway.
Well, he was selling them the cream and the clear while they were DC Assault.
So now that Urban Meyer's in Ohio State, because remember, when he took the job, we were thinking that maybe he took the job because he was tipped off that there was going to be no real punishment. I mean, and I guess when you think about it, what they're really losing is those 15 practices before a bowl. They can't be in a bowl next year. So you may lose a few recruits to that, but I think, you know, once the year's gone, Ohio State with Urban Meyer is going to remain, you know, like a power in college football. I don't really think it hurts them too much.
He gets a season of practice, essentially. He gets a season of practice.
Basically, his first year, you're right, his first year is a year to fill everything out. He can really make his move in recruiting next year. I mean, he can still make his move this year because people figure they're going to be there long enough to live out this ban and playing under Urban Meyer. I think they'll be playing for the national championship probably
in
that
year
when they're eligible or the year after that. That's my, that's my prediction. I think they'll be playing in the national championship almost right away.
They had to straight disassociate themselves from Terrell Pryor. That's hilarious, too. Like,
yeah,
what kind of punishment is that? Is that a real punishment? Like, seriously?
So what is it? Like, they have to tell him, like, if you ever get into the game on Monday night or Sunday night football, you can't say Terrell Pryor, Ohio State? Like, what? I don't understand.
No, that's Terrell associating himself, not Ohio State associating themselves They got to probably give up on any alumni merchandising.
Well, that's a lot of the stuff that we talk about on the show anyway that they probably shouldn't be doing. So basically they can't make any more money off Terrell Pryor's name
exactly.
for the next 5 years.
That's another way of saying it.
Okay.
That's another because, you know, we act
that's
like.
That's how the NCAA
sports.
Punishes its.
Yeah. It hits them in the revenue stream.
We're not going to let you exploit kids the way people don't want us to exploit kids anyway. You can't exploit
right,
them.
They try and act like it's all about academia and, you know, staying
healthy.
So they
throwing
face
on an academic brochure like, come to Ohio State because Terrell Pryor came here.
You can't exploit him for 5 years. After that, you can go back to exploiting this young man.
I don't know. It depends. He might have played himself out of exploitation possibilities by then. So
yeah, he's
worthless. Who knows?
He's a practice squad tight end at this point.
So in boxing news, or I think it's boxing news. Your man Brad is happy. He's giddy already. You know what I'm about to say. Floyd Mayweather gets basically 90 days in jail for smacking up his chick. He finally got sentenced for the whole domestic dispute thing that went down a while back. So this is his punishment. He got 90 days in jail. He got 100 hours of community service, a $2,500 fine, and he'll have to do a year-long domestic violence counseling program. So do you guys think the punishment fits the crime?
No, I
free
think
money
coward, I think coward should be sentenced to 1,000 deaths.
Free money may.
See, the bad part about this is because it's Floyd Mayweather, so anything you say negative, people are going to start throwing the H-word around. Oh, you hating, you're a hater. But,
black protectionism,
you know, don't forget that, you know, if he was guilty, and they seem to have found him guilty, he was accused of punching his ex-girlfriend, pulling her hair, and twisting her arm all in front of their two children. So,
damn.
You know, let's take away boxing. Let's take away the whole Floyd, Pac-Man, and all that kind of stuff. Let's just bring it down to a level of men and women.
Let's keep it.
I kind of think it's a soft penalty because I think if any of us did that, I think we'd be spending a little more than 90 days in jail. We'd even be paying more than $2,500. Like,
she must be getting yams up to somebody else, yo.
Let's take the black protectionism out of it, yo.
Yeah, that too.
Let's take that out. Yeah, you got to take the black protect because the black protectionists are ready to come with an excuse. I mean, he's demonstrated over the last, I'd say, 5 years that, you know, we thought things that made us think he was a coward. But now he's basically confirmed it because you beat women, and you don't even just beat them, you pull their hair. That's, never mind.
Yo, but keeping it on a sports level is kind of messed up considering, like, at this point, the other boy was ducking him, trying to, like, fight the ball for the sixth time instead of fighting Floyd this time. So now who knows what's going to happen with him having to do those 90 days because that goes to, like, April?
That whole – Floyd, it's going to go to at least – because he starts in January. So it's going to go to at least March, but whatever it goes to, it's not going to he's not going to have that customary 80 days that it takes to train for a fight and to promote a fight and stuff like that. So that May 5th date that they threw out there, you know, that we really didn't believe anyway, you can go ahead and scrap that. Yeah, we didn't really believe the fight was going to go down May 5th anyway, you know, albeit Pac-Man's fault, Floyd, for whoever's fault. A lot of people didn't believe that date anyway, so now it seems like that date is
Floyd
really
tried to find someone that couldn't duck, I guess his girlfriend.
Maybe that's the case. Who knows? Let's send Uncle Raj up to the prison to help him work out. He can work out while he's in prison.
Uncle Raj, he can't properly promote the fight. From prison.
Uncle Roger probably got warrants.
Uncle Roger probably got his own cell. He probably can just go in there and live with him for a while.
No, because wasn't Uncle Roger's case about hitting the chick too?
Of course.
Yeah, so that must be a Mayweather family.
A cowardly gene.
There you go. And that's what happens. Like, people don't realize that, like, that's his old head. Like, the stuff you do, these kids see, they mimic what they see. He probably saw Roger and his pop beating on chicks.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm bringing it down to a man level. You know, I'm trying to say forget all that other stuff. Yeah, Austin, just keep calling them cowards about all that other stuff, but
I say it to his face.
Like him, Chris Brown, like Chris Brown should still be in jail, in my opinion. I mean, you saw the chick's face. He beat the trash out of that girl. So, I mean, if that's what you're going to do as a man, I think you deserve a little more. But we actually had somebody, I'm not even going to name any names, but we had somebody on our Facebook page this morning actually defending Floyd Mayweather, saying that the punishment was excessive. 90 days? I don't think any punishment for, beating a woman up, if your sentence ends in the word days, come on, man. You're getting off easy. 90 days. Like,
yo, there are a lot of cowards.
That's my opinion.
World.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on the radio.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's a trip, man. But again, the moral of the story is, like, you should hit on women. The kids are watching, and they're going to duplicate that behavior, so cut it out.
Yeah.
True. We can all agree.
I wanted to mention something else real quick in college football, if people didn't hear. Matt Barkley has decided to go back to USC for his senior season. Anybody think this is a mistake?
It's tough to say. He would have been a top 10 pick, but at the same time, they have a chance to win a national chip next year. USC was one of the best teams in the country just because, they had punishments they were suffering because of the whole Reggie Bush thing, which means they couldn't play for the chip anyway. But if not, USC got like 10 pros on their team. So they do have a chance to compete for a title next year, but you always take that risk of going back to school where, you never know what could happen. You get an injury, you never know what will happen.
I don't think it could be – I don't think it would be like a liner situation where he just went back and his stock dropped, because you kind of have to look – if you're going to make this decision, you have to look and see who's out there, next year and what quarterbacks you might have to compete against for a draft spot. And I'm pretty sure he's done that due diligence because we've heard his name in the news about trying to make a decision on the draft for the last 2 weeks.
In our chat room, John Bapp says that USC was offering him more money under the table for his services. So
that's possible. That's possible.
He made the right financial decision. But a lot of those guys who go to USC, they love the lifestyle out there.
Yeah. Because if you end up going to a bad NFL team in a bad NFL city, the lifestyle you had in Southern California, USC is what? The second biggest thing I'm at to the Lakers.
Ask Matt Liner.
Yeah. Matt dropped. But I think this may be a situation where, unless he gets hurt, which is the big risk, I don't really think his stock will drop too much.
Is he top five? Because we already know the top two quarterbacks are considered Andrew Luck and RG3.
I probably would have actually had him top two as far as quarterbacks concerned. But, with winning the Heisman and all, RG3, his stock has risen a little bit. But there's going to be at least four teams in the top 10 who want quarterbacks this year.
That's true.
Willie G today, I was like, the reason he went back is because he saw where Tampa was drafting and he didn't want to go there.
With Barkley, I think he should have I think he probably should have come out, but he's probably, looking at his lifestyle in college and seeing all the scrutiny a lot of, rookie or NFL players go through. He's probably like, man, let me just live it up on campus for this next year, do my thing, and just chill. That's what I think would happen.
A lot of the guys who play in SC, either they're not hurting for money because of their family situation or they're not hurting for money because they're getting it from the boosters anyway. So,
I totally disagree with that. I agree with your statement. They are getting, they're getting paid quite handsomely. But I think that if you're a first round draft pick, I think you need to go when you have sat down with your advisors and ascertained that you are a first round draft pick. Because the risk of playing football, though it's not as great in the NCAA as it is in the NFL, it's still a great risk to your body. And anything can happen. One injury, even an injury that you can recover from, could cost you millions and millions of dollars in draft stock. I think
there was a quarterback a couple of years ago who dropped down tremendously. I can't think of his name. Maybe someone in the chat room can help me. But Brandon in the chat room says that in his opinion that Barkley should be the number one pick next year without injury if he plays up to his potential and you know, and he doesn't get hurt next year, he may be in the World War.
I don't think his stock will drop.
The contracts are different.
Yeah, you're right. Also, I mean, I'm saying in a violent game, if he doesn't get hurt, but at the same time, if you want to look at this from a fan's perspective, not even a fan, let's say a football purist perspective, I appreciate it because in every sport, football, basketball, we always talk about how, you know, these people get their head capped up by what their potential draft position is. They go out. And then the quality of the game is lost because, you know, we have a lot of people in these professional leagues who aren't ready to be in these professional leagues. So,
if he
feels that he's financially fit enough to go back into college, you know, try to win, learn his craft a little bit more, and come out into the NFL a better player, hey, I'm all for that. Unless he's like,
I definitely feel that. But our perspective and our interests are not mutually aligned. So I'm one of those football purists. Yeah, I want you to do whatever is going to get you to optimum performance level to give me the very best product so that I can come on Thursdays from 6 to 8 and talk my ish. But from his perspective, you only get one shot. In my opinion, you only get one shot. It's like you're not going to get two shots. So if you get injured, sure, there's a chance you come back. You've got exceptions to the rule, Sam Bradford being one of them, but I don't know. I'd tell him to go. I would go.
I mean, I feel you. Like I said, we can look at it from a bunch of different perspectives, and there's situations where I tell him to go, situations where I tell him to stay. And, you know,
hey, I have something.
The stay situation would be me not giving a damn about him as a human being and me looking at the game that I love and wanting that to be, you know, better off in the long run, you know. But
hey,
if I
Dev,
cared about him as a human being, I'd tell him to go. Go ahead.
Hey, Dev, I have an interesting outlook. Now, remember, guys like Sam Bradford were getting like $50 million guaranteed or $40 million guaranteed. Under the new rookie wage scale, I think he might only be guaranteed something like 2 or 3 year deal for like $10 million or $8 million, something like that. So I think that might have had. I think that might have played a part in him saying, looking at the monetary difference.
Yeah, and like Brandon was saying in the chat room, it's a real possibility that his stock may rise. So, you know, he can end up in a better financial situation. I hope so. I don't want to see him do this and the situation.
That's who it was. Well, that's one of them, Jake Locker. He dropped a couple spots because he didn't come out. Yeah, because Jake Locker was supposed to be the first pick in the draft.
He's supposed to be the number one pick, yeah.
He played trash his senior year, though.
He played sparingly for the Titans this year, and he hasn't looked half bad in his.
He
hasn't looked half bad, but that's just crazy. When like, imagine how it feels when you could have been the number one pick, and then you go to you know. Yeah, so I mean that's also
you could have been the number one pick in a year when they were overpaying number one picks.
Exactly, they were getting that chunky cheese. But yo, the thing is. It's you know, you don't know what's going to happen. So we'll see, because Matt Barkley can come back and have a horrible season and drop. I mean, the thing is, Jake Locker didn't play well.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Jake Locker's senior year,
they
were talking about how good an athlete he is and maybe he could do, you know, the black quarterback thing and come in the league as a receiver or something.
Let's talk to pros right now, yo.
Good segue.
Absolutely. That's how I do. I'm nice. But, yo, the Tebow and Tom Brady game last week. Jesus must be a bigger Brady fan because Tom Brady was slicing and dicing the Broncos defense. Yo, Tom Brady is something special, yo. And it's funny how the Tebow haters came out the woodworks like Tom Brady wasn't getting his Joe Montana on, yo.
Like Tom Brady isn't going to retire as probably top three to ever do it. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, come on, man.
Yo, that's the worst kind of thing that I see with sports fans. This man, he's led, you know, I'm not going to sit here and give him all the credit, say he won. He's led the Broncos to, like, you know, seven wins out of the last eight games. This dude finally loses a game and you know, people want to attack our page immediately. I guess Tebow ain't this or Tebow ain't that. Yo, he lost one game. Like, you were waiting for weeks to be able to say this. Like, you don't feel some type of way because you've been holding that for weeks. Because a few of them, few of the same people, were letting it go early in some of the weeks past, and they were making these comebacks. So, you know, they were speaking too early and feeling a little stupid after the game. So as soon as they lose a game that they were, you know, who really thought they were going to win in the first place? And like Jimmy said, people forget what Tom Brady is and what he did on the other side.
But you know,
it's disrespectful to Tom Brady and the Patriots. That's what it really is.
Not to their defense,
though. Yeah, but you know what's funny to me is I was telling cats like, yo, we're talking about the Broncos. That's what makes it crazy. Because think about this: before Tebow, we wouldn't even have been talking about the Broncos. So, you know what I mean? Like people were saying, oh, did you see the Saturday Night Live thing? Like, Tebow made the team relevant. The Broncos haven't been relevant since number 7 hung them up. I mean, and, you know, so that right there goes to show you his contribution to our team this year. But at the end of the day, Tom Brady is an all-time great. I was watching what he was doing. I'm like, yo, I've never seen somebody do so much. You know, he does more with less than any other great quarterback in the history of the game, in my opinion.
Well, we can say that less throughout most of his career, but right now he's running with two things, because I can't even call Gronkowski and Hernandez
things.
Yeah, them dudes aren't – yo, I've never seen two tight ends. Listen, I'm not even going to go into my rant. I'm going to just say this. They ran a reverse with a tight end. I'm done.
That's that old Greatest Show on Turf plays. They used to run a – reverses with tight ends and whatnot, but
he ran a reverse with a tight end.
They're reinventing the tight end position, and those dudes are beasts. Like, you can't guard both of them. I don't know how you're gonna do that.
Yeah, but
Gronkowski. Yeah. So what happened in that game was the Patriots came in and put up Patriot numbers. Say, all right, we're gonna put up 45. I actually think the Broncos offense played fairly well. I mean, they put up 23 points. That's what the Broncos' offense are capable. As long as Tebow lives, if he starts, he will never play on a team that can score 45 points. And that's not an indictment of him. That's just not the way you run a Tebow-led offense. So the defense, the Broncos' defense really let them down. That game, that's what I saw. And those three fumbles didn't help.
Okay, I personally think that the Patriots under Belichick is probably the greatest adjustment team, you know, of the last decade in football.
And the Eagles,
always see it. This year they have to do it a lot because, you know, their defense might put them in an early hole. And, you know, they have to adjust what they planned on doing on offense because it's like, okay, we have to get in, you know, just point scoring mode. And that's what they did because the game started and it seemed like it was going to be kind of a back and forth, maybe a struggle. You know, the Patriots defense, came out giving up points like they do on a weekly basis, like they did against Philadelphia. But Belichick made the adjustments. Brady came out and he just seemed like a different person once he hits that switch. And there was really nothing that Denver's defense could do about it. So they did let the team down, but when Tom Brady is going the way that he was going in that game, how many defenses can stop him? Seriously.
That's what I'm saying. And the thing about it is, like, they're having, like, a quietly good season. It's like, with all the attention that was given to Tebow and the Packers and their run, it's like, yo, people are not even peeping what the Patriots are doing. I think they only got, like, 3 losses, right?
Yeah, they are. They have been under the radar. I mean, the Raiders.
How you going to have the best record in the conference and you still under the radar, though? That's crazy.
The race in the AFC was so tight throughout the, you know, maybe like the first 10 weeks of the season.
Middle of the season.
You know, every win counted. You know, that's the cliche that you
know. I think
the Patriots
had
in the NFC that every win doesn't count. But in the AFC this year, every win counts. Because remember a few weeks back
when we were talking about how
the Patriots took a bad loss because the loss took them from the first seed to the sixth.
From first to sixth, yeah. I was just about
to. Now, that's how crazy it is in the AFC this year. But yeah, so you're 11-3, and you're kind of flying under the radar. Tim Tebow's getting all the attention going into the game, and Tom Brady just had to sit back and remind some folks that he is Tom Brady.
Yeah, I think that. Speaking of the Patriots, yo, like, what is your take on the Chad Ochocinco situation?
He called it to Evelyn Rosado. Evelyn Rosado's boyfriend. Evelyn Rosado's boyfriend called a touchdown.
Now, I know, but he has like 200 yards on the year.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't even, not even that he's not producing. It's to the point where he doesn't even play much.
Can I be honest?
And you go back to that Teddy Bruschi rant, you know, maybe it was a case of Chad not knowing his playbook and not knowing what he's doing. How do you not get into this offense? They spread the ball.
That's what it is. That's what it is, Dev. And it's not, and this is, I want to be very clear here. It is not a diminished, his skills are not diminished. The way their offense works is when you line up, both Brady and the receivers have an option, have option routes. So everybody has an option of one, of two or three routes that they can run based on the coverage and where they should be. Chad doesn't know what he's looking at. He doesn't know how to read the defense according to the plays he's given instinctively and get where he needs to get to. So they can't trust him to be on the field. That's one of the reasons why I'm so high on Wes Welker. Not so much because of his physical attributes, but he's such a heady player, and he's able to think the game cerebrally because you can't line him up on the outside, but dude lines up on the inside and knows exactly where to be based on the coverage he's facing.
Right.
Chad isn't there.
Yeah, I mean, and it's obvious now. When Bruschi made his little rant, you know, we all told Bruschi to calm down, shut up, and all that kind of stuff. And that was only after a week or two. I mean, the season's in its final stretch right now, and he's still not really a part of this offense.
So like, we owe him an apology?
One of the best receivers in the league in the past, you know, 7 to 10 years, and he's catching his first touchdown? Week 15?
You know, the funny thing is, it looked like he got open because it was like, oh, that's him. Let him keep running. Like, you know, it looked like his touchdown was a result of him stinking the season up.
let him go. Get open. It's all good.
He ain't throwing to him.
He can't beat us.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's talk about some more football. Matter of fact, let's keep it with Tebow, though. Did you guys hear John Elway's latest comments about how Tim Tebow will be there?
Yeah, I got the quote from Elway here. He was like, Tim Tebow's not going anywhere. I mean, he's going to be a Bronco, and we're going to do everything we can, and hopefully he's that guy. It still seems to me, Jimmy, it still sounds kind of ambiguous. Like,
political.
Because at the end he's still saying we still hope he's that guy.
President
is that like, okay, we're going with him and we hope he's the guy that he looks like he can be? Or is that like, you know, for the rest of this season, you know, we hope that he's the guy that we can go with? I don't really understand.
It's kind of like he didn't say anything.
Yeah,
yeah,
it really
sounds
like
he didn't say anything at all.
He said a bunch of words to not really say anything. But it seemed like the public and the media just ate it up as Elway saying, Tebow's here to stay. He's the quarterback of the future. I didn't really read it that way. I think Elway was just saying what he thought
he had made
to
a comment.
Say.
He made a comment like, I'm going to do whatever it is to help him, possibly working with him in the offseason, this, that, and the third. And I'm like, you know, it got me to thinking. See, he's not their guy. He didn't draft Tebow.
Yeah.
So I guess if he works with him in the offseason and puts in time with him, he can kind of like make him his guy. So just in case he does have success, he can take the credit for it.
That's a lot of work, though. That's a lot of work you're going to have to put in.
It sounds like Elway might possibly be at least committing to another year of the Tebow project.
But you know what, though, Kill? Over the last couple of weeks, you can see improvement. Like, he may even pass the pass game that, you know, I didn't think he had the ability to make. Like, you know.
I've got another.
That where I was, like, impressed. Not impressed because – it's the kind of thing where you're impressed because it's Tebow. You're not impressed when Phillip Rivers makes that throw or
– Yeah,
you know,
that's what I'm saying.
Aaron
I'm saying
Rodgers makes
Tebow.
That throw. But from what
well,
he
these days with Philip Rivers.
About,
but
think
anyway.
About think about the throws he tried to make in the Detroit Lions game, and you think about some of the throws that he made last week. You have to be
yeah.
a hater to try to say
he hit a couple he hit a couple slants in strides. First of all, when I saw it, I was like, what are the Broncos doing running timing routes?
I mean, the confidence of the coaching staff. I mean, they see him
but
in
now,
practice every day.
You know, the other thing that I've heard, and this is just a theory. I don't know how y'all feel about this, but it's been said that Tebow is actually a very intelligent quarterback, and one of the reasons he throws those ground balls or knuckleballs is he knows with the limitations he has throwing the ball, he would rather throw a McBounce pass than try and fit it into a space and do something that he can't do. So he's I'm really a lot of those Jonathan balls.
I don't
like,
buy that with any quarterback.
You don't
I didn't
buy
it when people try to sell it to me with McNabb. I'm not going to buy it if people try to sell that with Tebow. Bounce
okay.
passes just look bad. Come on. Nobody's doing that on purpose. Like people used to tell me,
somebody actually said
out of their mouth to me, McNabb throws low and away a lot because his receivers don't get separation. So, oh man, come on. Like, that's the kind of thing like we want to just smack the dude in the mouth before he finishes.
There are football minds that say the same thing, and I'm not taking it for Donovan because I don't believe it either. But I also find it funny that he – you call them McBounce passes, like you just associate ground balls with McNabb. But there are people that say that. They use the same excuse. Like
I told y'all with 85% of the league, 85% of the quarterbacks in the league, I don't believe that the back shoulder throw is something that they do on purpose. I can name you three or four that I know do it. You know, Drew Brees, great at it. Aaron Rodgers is great at it. Phillip Rivers is great at it. Well, Phillip Rivers is just great at throwing it up and Vincent Jackson going to get it.
Yo, I give him – yo, Phillip Rivers, like, he got that little Brett Favre in him. He just – if he got single coverage, he's throwing it up.
Yeah, he ignorant. like, he don't care. But he has – his main weapon is taller than any of Brett Favre's
That's
weapons
true.
In the past.
Well,
so
again,
it seems like it's the smartest decision to do that.
Let me clarify that because Brett Favre threw it up without single coverage. He threw it in a triple coverage. He just didn't care, period.
You throw it up in the triple coverage is what you're saying? Well, I've seen him do that against the Eagles, so I ain't going to even – I like to defend Brett, but I can't on some of that. Yeah, so like I said, I don't believe half of these guys throw the back shoulder throw on purpose, so I damn sure ain't going to believe that somebody's throwing ground balls because they're giving up on the play. Oh, man, I can't get it in there. Let me just throw this on the ground.
Let's move on from the Broncos. So let's talk about the Packers, talking about that back shoulder throw because Aaron Rodgers got that down pat. But that being said, were they exposed this week when they lost? I mean, did the Chiefs give out the blueprint to beat them?
Real quick. I think if you look at some of the records of teams after their coach was fired, if I'm not mistaken, I know those teams normally win that first game under the interim coach. And it seems like Romeo Crennel, I mean, over in Kansas City, I mean, first week as the head coach, he got the guys playing above their normal abilities, and they got the win. That's what I think will happen. I mean, and Aaron Rodgers, they dropped some passes too.
Yeah, that win was big for Romeo because it probably, you know, solidified him a job that he probably doesn't deserve. But I don't buy it. You know, a lot of people, they were exposed. The blueprint is out. Come on, man, you're undefeated. You're allowed to have a bad game. Like, if it was that easy to go, I mean, I know they lost to a team that you probably wouldn't think, but that's where the cliche comes in, any given Sunday. You can lose to anybody in the NFL. So I'm thinking, you know, this team, if it wasn't so hard to go undefeated, then you wouldn't have everybody talking about it every week. It wouldn't be a watch, can they do it, can they do this, and looking at their schedule. If it was so easy, then, you know, it would be done every year. So I don't think there's any blueprint. I think the Packers had a bad game. And what did we say earlier? We said if the offense ever had a game where they didn't score the kind of points that they usually score, that team would lose. Even though the defense didn't give up too much because, you know, it's not like Kansas City scored a bunch of points. But when that offense doesn't play lights out, they're going to have these type of games. So, okay, they're not going to go undefeated. I think it's best that they get that out of the way now. Get some motivation. Like, okay, people think it's sweet now. I still think Green Bay is going to run through the league and win the Super Bowl. That's my
opinion.
Hey, we have a comment. Hey, Jimmy, real quick, we have a comment. I think Romeo Crennel was feeling like this.
The Bears are who we thought they were. That's why we took the damn field. Now, if you want to crown them, then crown your ass.
Yo, but I think that people weren't, like, taking the loss of Greg Jennings as serious as they should. Jordy Nelson, as good as he is, tried to jump into that slot, and it was not the same at all. I don't think he got his first touch into the second half.
Jimmy, that's what people don't understand, that some guys, their presence on the field makes some other guys look a little better because it opens them up for stuff that they wouldn't get if that guy wasn't there. And
think about it. Think about it. In football, right? In football, how many times have you seen a number two receiver try to jump into that number one slot, and you're like, yo, it's just not the same?
Yeah, and you're wondering, like, man, we thought this dude was so talented. He kills it as a number two.
Alvin Harper.
Yo, I was about to say that. Alvin Harper, yo.
Yeah. Like, yeah, Alvin Harper, you look like a beast when Michael Irvin's on the other side. But when Michael Irvin retires or gets injured, you know, it's not as easy, it's not as sweet.
Shout out to my man TJ Houshmandzadeh too. Shout out to him.
Yeah,
but
you
often see that. So, you know, it's a thing. Greg Jennings, that missing him was that was a lot too, because he didn't play. So
shout out to Deshaun Jackson not balling out of control when Macklin was hurt. Oh, my bad. But
let me ask you, guys. Well, Dev, you already think they're still going to win the bowl. Austin, what do you think about the bowl? You think has your mind changed in terms of their long-term outlook?
Come on, man. My knees do not jerk at all.
Okay, what do you think?
As long as they got my man running point guard and he's dishing the rock like Sam, you heard, yo, Green Bay is it.
What if the dream team sneak in the playoffs, though?
I don't want that to happen because I don't want to see mediocrity in the playoffs.
I heard that.
I'll never say that I don't want that to happen as a fan. I can be an honest fan and say they don't deserve to be in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after it's over, I can say that they wasted a spot in the playoffs. But I'm always going to want to see them there because once the playoffs start, you know, anything could pretty much happen. You know, it's a new season. Anything can pretty much happen. I mean, anything usually doesn't happen in Philadelphia, if that makes sense. But
why Jason Babin got like a million sacks, yo? Like, really irrelevant sacks.
We just talked about it. When that guy on the other side is a manimal and a garanimal, and you facing single covers or single blocks on those tackles, you're going to get off. I'm not knocking Jason Babin because he's very good. But Trent Cole is special. And so Trent Cole being special demands a double and a triple team. So Jason Babin is getting one-on-one work with a
tackle. Yeah, but my point is, you seem like to be the most irrelevant sacks ever, yo. It's like he gets him in like the first quarter. Like,
up until this week, that's the same thing I said. Like, dude has the most meaningless sacks ever. And he's pressing towards that record. You haven't heard them shoot that out there yet, but he has enough games, you know, on this pace to compete for that record, that single.
Yo, dude got like
record.
18. What do you got? How many sacks does he have right now?
I think he has 19, 18 or 19.
I think I saw a stat where he had like 19 sacks and like 30 tackles, like something crazy like that.
That's why everybody says that his sacks are so meaningless because he does nothing but. Like, you can run at him, you can run around him, you can do whatever. You know, most of his tackles are sacks. But In this last game against the Jets, you know, a couple of his sacks did come on, like, third down situations. And, you know, even if the team is 6-8 and the season might be pretty much meaningless, you know, third down is when you want your sack dudes to get at the quarterback. So
I want him to get it because I want an Eagle to have it.
Yeah.
You want him to pass Reggie's number?
I changed my mind.
I mean, the fact that Reggie doesn't have the single season, then, you know, I don't mind. Like Austin's, I would like the Eagle an Eagle to have the record. So, you know, he's not going to see Reggie's all-time number. So,
yo, I hope that
he said that Cole is not special. He's only special at wearing down at the end of the season.
That's what I was saying. Yeah, I don't think either one of them are special. I think they're both very, very good at most. I don't think there's anything special about Trent Cole.
Well, this is
the part of the season where you forget Trent Cole is on the Eagles.
Let me qualify
like
that.
Sean Jackson in the playoffs. Like,
let me qualify that. Trent Cole is good enough to demand a consistent double and sometimes triple team. Now, a special player, a great player, finds ways to be productive even with that being the case.
Triple teaming Trent Cole?
Double teaming him. He gets a double. Because Jason Babin does not.
A consistent, though? I don't know. I would have to go to the coach's film, but I don't remember Trent Cole getting a consistent double team. And he definitely can't. It could be in years past, but he definitely can't this year because we also got Cullen Jenkins on the inside, who's a good pass rusher, a great pass rusher from, you know, an interior lineman position.
How many sacks does he have?
I'm not sure with numbers, but yeah, it's around. I think it's around about seven. Somebody, our War Room family up in the chat room, you know, hook us up with some of these statistics while we're talking about this. How many sacks does Cullen have on the year?
Jared Allen also has 17 and a half.
Jared Allen's better than both of them dudes at the same time.
Yeah, but Jared Allen gets those sacks while Minnesota's losing, so you don't even really, you know, where'd that come from? But, you know, Jared Allen's always been a baller. So
that's a good point.
Not a lot of celebrating going on when he gets them now.
If you look at the top three numbers of the sack guys, I wonder what their team's record was that year. Well, first off, Michael Strahan, he got the record because of that fraud gave him the record. But that's either here or there. That fraud.
Hey, Cullen has six sacks this year. Cullen Jenkins.
Okay.
Six? Okay, because I think in the chat room somebody said Trent nine, Cullen five and a half. But it is what it is. Half sack's corny. Yeah, so, half sack is kind of trash.
Do it, but. They still calling.
It is what it is. Let me ask you guys another question. If we both get to
the quarterback at the same time, just defy mathematical logic and give us both a sack.
Give us both a sack.
They should make them stop right there and do rock, paper, scissors. But, yo, real quick, the Colts and Rams.
Well, they should have to rumble T.O. for the sack.
The Colts and Rams are still at it for the first pick of the draft. Now, if the Colts get the pick, they do have Manning coming back, but the Rams also have invested money into a young quarterback. So let me ask you guys a question.
I think Minnesota might be in that mix too.
Yeah, Minnesota has a young quarterback, but with that being said, Minnesota doesn't have the same investment that the Rams have. So let's take these three teams, Minnesota, Colts, and the Rams. Do you think that if you're any of the teams, you should just take luck, or do you think it depends upon which team gets the pick?
No, all cases you – well, now let me rephrase that. I think that St. Louis should trade the pick. I think the Colts should take him and sit him for two to three seasons, depending on Manning. And I think that the Vikings should trade the pick.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Dad?
All right, here we go. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, Kill. Go ahead. Because you sound like you got the whole thing ready.
Yeah. I was going to say, but hold up. With the Vikings, didn't they sign their quarter QB savior in the offseason?
He is no longer there.
Yeah, with Donovan McNabb now, it's like, no. Nah, I think
they also drafted Christian Ponder at like 10.
Yeah, that's true. Now they have Ponder at 10, and then the Rams have Sam Bradford in his situation. You know, he'll be going into his third year. Then you have the Peyton Manning situation. So I think those – three teams have a lot of questions to ask of, you know, all three of them may trade it, or if they draft luck, they may have to just trade Manning or Bradford or Ponder. So,
Ponder is making like $32,000 a year, but Bradford got one of those, like, yo, Bradford.
He was the last one. He was the last one to get the crazy money.
55 mil.
So I don't know how, you know, that they'll take a huge hit with that. Actually, Exactly. The thing is, like, Minnesota could just get rid of Ponder. Like, they could just take that hit because he ain't making as much money. He's on a new deal. But
Minnesota could. But truthfully, it's probably going to be between the Colts and the Rams, you know, most likely. See, now, as a player, you know, if you're banking on Andrew Luck being that once-in-a-generation talent that they say he is, as a player, I'm like, man, I trade Sam Bradford in a minute to get Andrew Luck. But then, like you guys said, you got to take into account that Sam Bradford was in that last class with the first few draft picks, got crazy, silly money. So it's like, are you willing to take that hit and move on from the Sam Bradford, from the Sam Bradford era?
You might have to, because
Sam Bradford has been breaking down through injuries. You know, he just hasn't been that same guy in his second year where they thought they had a quarterback on the rise in his first year.
Even in his first year, he was dink and dunk. He can't throw the ball past 10 yards downfield.
But, Dev and Jimmy, I'm going to respond to both of y'all on this one. First of all, he's got just a bunch of fat guys blocking for him. Like, they're not really football players. And then he's got Danny Amendola as his number one receiver. And before that, Donnie Avery. So don't you dare say he can't go down the field. He has no talent. So that's why you trade that Andrew Luck pick, because you can get a whole team of talent for that number one pick. And then you can really see whether this dude can ball out. I wouldn't even spend the pick on skill players. I would spend it on shoring up the offensive line.
You're right, because you know what I've heard? I've heard that they could possibly demand somewhere like two first-rounders and 2 seconds, and maybe even, Adam Schefter said this, maybe even 4 first-round picks for Andrew Luck. If I'm the Rams and I can get that, I probably hold on to Bradford and solidify his offensive line. You know,
I hear what you're saying, Austin, but he's also been playing. He played with Brandon Lloyd. And he don't have an arm to get it downfield. But that's neither here nor there. My thing is, if Andrew Luck is going to be as good as they say he is, I don't care who you got at quarterback. Unless you got Rodgers, you gotta like, you know, take the guy.
We sound like fans now, because the two general management strategies, personnel strategies that I follow, I'm a disciple of, is the Belichick and the Reed school of thought. You can find decent to good, sometimes even great skill players later on in the draft. You don't have to mortgage your future on that first round pick. That's a Jerry Jones type strategy.
If you have that pick, I mean, you have the number one pick. You say mortgage your future as if you're trading 4 number ones to get that pick. We're talking about teams that plan on landing in that spot. We're not planning on, but may land in the spot.
Well, if you get the number one pick and you can't protect him, then you're going to be in that same spot. So you have to leverage that pick to fill out your roster.
So that's you saying that Sam Bradford is a good enough quarterback. You're basing that on what?
Basically, I'm not saying he's good or not. It's kind of us jumping to conclusion because we haven't seen enough of him in the ideal situation to make a determination. If you're coming in as a rookie and you're ending up on your back most of the time, he's on the back more than a $2 toot.
I get what you're saying, because David Carr was supposed to be a superstar. And
David Carr.
Their lack of an offensive line probably ruined his career.
At the end of the day, I don't know how good this guy Luck is going to be, but we haven't seen a guy who's been getting this much praise from the actual scouts in our lifetime. They say possibly Elway, but
maybe
we don't remember Elway coming out of college. But I'm talking about who's been getting this kind of, like, you know, acclaim from the scouts. And if you have an opportunity to get a once in a lifetime player, you don't take it.
Listen, whenever they go right, I go left. So I'll let my eyes determine how good Luck is, and I think that a team that has more pieces in place should take that gamble on their future and move to get him, as opposed to somebody who's in the basement. Because if you can't protect him, he could be another David Carr. I think David Carr had the talent to be something good, but David Carr has the same shell shock as people coming back from Afghanistan. Dude stays up at night from not having good blocking.
He got PTSD.
Yeah,
listen, definitely. I hear what you're saying, but I'm just saying that again, this guy right here is the most – you have an opportunity. If you land in that spot, you land with the number one pick and the option to take a player, I mean, you can possibly
– And you're telling me this, and I know my roster, right? So I know what I have, and I have a chance to land this pick. So go ahead.
Yeah, you know your roster, but at the end of the day, when you rebuild this team, you're not going to rebuild it just with this draft. You don't want to lock in your quarterback of the future, a guy who has they're saying could be one of the greats of all time. You don't take that guy. You trade down to get a bunch of guys, and you still don't have your quarterback in place.
If you can't protect that guy, it doesn't matter if he's a combination of Elway, Vic,
Listen,
Warner.
The Colts initially couldn't protect Manning, but they got it together.
Mm-hmm.
The Colts initially couldn't protect Manning.
So your theory is take the guy and build around him instead of letting him go to try to build around what you already have.
If this guy is any – he don't even have to be as good as they say. If he's anything like they're saying he is, you get him and build around him. I'm not saying you're going to be great this upcoming season, but you can't pass on a Peyton Manning, a Dan Marino, these guys who had this acclaim coming out.
But you don't know that you're going to end up with that. But what you do know is if you get the hogs to protect someone, you can have –
That's the nature of the draft, though, Austin. You never know what you're getting for real, for real.
Even if you draft with the lineman at one, you never know what it is.
It
could be Tim Couch. It could be Tom.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
but I've never,
never
we've,
know
we've, we've never seen a guy, but we've never seen a guy with this many professionals. Not saying they're right, because at the end of the day, we don't know whether they're right.
They have four quarterbacks.
With that being said, like, yo, you can set your franchise back forever. You'll be like, damn, we had a chance to get this guy. He can end up being like, you know, that quarterback.
I don't think it's possible to set your franchise. Now, I think in basketball it is, but I don't think it's possible to set your franchise back in football by not taking the number one, because there's too many people on your roster and there's too many players to affect the outcome of the game. And it's been proven time and time again that the more successful draft strategies are those – that find gems in lower rounds than trying, unless you're able to stockpile a number of first round picks. If you're able to do that, how often does that happen?
I understand. But
there's never been a quarterback.
It's the ultimate team game, but we are talking about the quarterback position. Like, I think even if you, a lot of times, if you have a pretty good team and your quarterback stinks, you can set the organization back. Like, I mean, it's speculation because it didn't happen, but I can pretty much confidently say that had the Green Bay Packers not been able to move on from Favre to Aaron Rodgers, they would not be what they are right now. You know, if they just had
they
to move on to the next guy that they were.
And people thought they were crazy for getting their quarterback when they got him, even at 20. You know what I'm saying? And the thing is, this guy is cut from the same cloth they say as Peyton Manning and John Elway and Dan Marino and these guys.
In that instance, I feel like him sitting for those 3 years, despite what we argue and go back and forth, it had to help him. He did learn something, and he was able to step in with an understanding of the game.
I believe that.
At three years. We're talking about taking Andrew Luck and Jimmy saying
keep the guy. So that would be the same, like, say, if the Colts. I mean, I know y'all were kind of talking about
that. I said with the Colts. I said
yeah,
the Colts should
the
take
Colts.
Him and keep him.
Yeah, okay,
my point is, how do you pass on him if you're any of these teams?
My example was this. If you have Peyton, Peyton is 36. I never bet against Peyton, but I hedge my bet, and I would take Luck and keep him and sit him for two seasons at 38.
My point is this, Austin. He's cut from the same cloth as a Peyton Manning, and Peyton Manning didn't have the hogs in front of him when he got – if you remember Peyton Manning's first season.
But what you're doing is arguing with an exception, and you can never argue with an exception because –
This guy is supposed to be the exception. This dude already
has a brace on his leg, and you're discounting NFL linebackers who are going to come through – a line like St. Louis and Swiss cheese that, and take out all their frustrations on his entire body. Now, who's to say that he could stand up under that?
We're not talking about a guy who's slated to go number one on any given year. This is what they're called a once-in-a-lifetime player. We're not talking about someone who went number one this past season. We're not talking about a player like that. We're talking about a guy they say is the once-in-a-lifetime quarterback, the Peyton Manning, the John Elway, this type of player. We're not talking about just an every – we're not talking about, like, say, a Matt Barkley next year. We're talking about a guy who could have went number one this year.
And with everybody believing that, everybody understanding that, how much is the next team willing to give up to get that once-in-a-lifetime guy if I already have a great – what I believe is a great talent? Not necessarily his talent, but a great talent already on my roster who has seen NFL action, and I know that if I get the line to protect him and the tools for him to throw to, he's going to have success. Because it's already been proven.
Real quick, if anybody out there has an opinion on this, you can give us a call at 323-410-0012. And if you're already listening on your phone, if you want to, you know, weigh in on this, just press 1. And we'll see if we can get you on.
And for those in the chat room, let us know what you think too. But I'm saying, Austin, that's saying that you believe that that Bradford is that guy. I mean, you know, he may be, but
I don't know whether he's that guy. I know that in the NFL, if you cannot protect, your quarterback is going to get injured. You can throw Peyton Manning out there as the one example, but the books are filled with guys who are shell-shocked because
I also believe you are overstating just how bad their offensive line is as well. They're not great, but they're not as bad as you say they are either.
No, I watched the Rams. They're bad.
And I've watched the Rams too, but they haven't given
up. I watched the Rams, brother.
I don't know this to be a fact, but you probably can look, and there are teams that give up a lot more sacks than the Rams.
I'm gonna give you an example of why. They are Bradford ain't no athlete, so Bradford got to get rid of the ball quick. He ain't dancing around, he ain't holding, because he'll get his block knocked off. So he came in the league getting rid of the ball quick. So it's not like you've got somebody where you've got to coach your offensive line. Okay, hold your blocks. This guy, you know, it takes him a while to make a decision. I mean, he's not one of those type of dudes.
No, I mean, I hear what you're saying. I mean, he's check down Charlie. He was check down Charlie in college,
exactly,
too. I'm just saying that if you look at the offensive lines in the league, then, you know, they don't have as bad as an offensive line.
I'm not mad at you being check down Charlie if for most of your career your only weapon is Donnie Avery and Danny Amendola. He just got Brandon Lloyd, who it's questionable as to – I mean, I'm a Brandon Lloyd fan, but Brandon Lloyd doesn't have many fans.
Yeah. I mean, you look at offensive lines like the Buccaneers or offensive lines. I know Carolina has, like, they were saying one of statistically the worst offensive lines in the league. How they keep that statistic,
This goes to my theory around quarterbacks. You either have the playmaker or you have the facilitator. The best quarterbacks are equal balance of both, but in those cases where you have a bad line, you have to have a playmaker at quarterback. When you've got a great line, you can have more of a facilitator. So basically, we have a guy who
the scouts are saying is that playmaker, who's that once in a lifetime guy, and you want to hold on to a facilitator and take a chance. And another thing, you're acting as if by just trading it down, you're automatically want to get a good offensive lineman. You're taking a risk there.
I'm not trading down, but Jimmy, I'm not really talking about getting that offensive line just through the draft. You can leverage that number one pick to not only get draft picks, but you can get proven talent as well. Let's not rule out the fact that you can free up cap space. You can throw additional linemen in there. You can do a number of things.
But here's my point. Here's my point, and we can move after this because we're going in a circle. I think that if you have an opportunity to get the once-in-a-lifetime player and you don't have to pay him that much considering a new deal, you could take this guy at number one and not really have to pay what you would have had, what you've already paid, check down Charlie. I mean,
but you're kind of being a knee-jerk reaction type dude. You're reacting just because you've seen this dude out. You haven't seen him in a – so you're telling me the Rams have built their offensive lineup and built their team for Bradford to be successful, and he hasn't been?
That's not what I'm saying. I don't think he's had an opportunity to prove one way or another in the NFL.
Okay.
I'm calling him check down Charlie based upon watching him play his one season in the NFL, watching him play in college. I'm not saying he won't be great. He may be the greatest quarterback ever, but what I'm saying is if you have an opportunity to get this other guy, you have to take it. I mean, for real,
you've seen enough of him. You've seen some of him. We've seen nothing of Luck in the NFL. We only hear what the scouts are saying.
I know that, but I've seen them both play in college. And
I mean, the reason that we're even having this long conversation about it because it's going to be a difficult decision for any team who has to make it, because you don't want to be the team to pass on the next Peyton Manning. You don't want to be the team to mortgage your future on the next Ryan Leaf. Like, it's difficult. It's
You know what? My whole thing is the next Tom Brady, the next Peyton Manning, the next Aaron Rodgers comes through proving it on the field. You can't ever determine what that's going to be from out of the draft. As much as we try, I know that's what we try and do, but that's distinguished on accomplishment.
What I'm saying is some guys have the tools. You have to. I mean, how could you not? I mean, Aaron Rodgers could have arguably been, and a lot of people said he should have been a number one pick that year. Tom Brady. Yeah, he was supposed to be number one pick. And Tom Brady, I mean, not Tom Brady, Peyton Manning was the number one pick by far. It wasn't even close. I mean, some people could have argued that bum that went to the Chargers, but with that Ryan Leaf, but with that being said, Peyton Manning was that guy. They knew that he was going to be a franchise quarterback. Sam Bradford, I mean, he was a number one pick. I'm not calling this guy a bum. I don't want to say I'm calling him a bum. I say check down Charlie based upon watching him play in college, you know, and at the end of the day, if that works, it works.
Ain't nothing wrong with checking it down.
No, there's nothing wrong with that.
Your arch nemesis never wanted to check it down, and you knock him for it.
Listen. You're absolutely right about that.
Red is going deep at all costs.
Yeah, he's a bum, but we ain't talking about that bum. What I'm saying is
70,000 yards.
Matter of fact, let's move on. I want to hear what the people say. People will let us know on Facebook.
Real quick, man. Is the Dream Team going to the playoffs, man? Y'all know the situation. They have to win out, of course. So they have to beat Dallas and beat Washington. But at the same time,
that ain't hard.
They need the Jets to beat the Giants this week, and they need the Giants to then go into their final game against Dallas and beat Dallas. Is this possible? Like, can it? It's just a lot that needs to fall the right way. Is this possible? Kill, you're a Cowboys fan. Do you think your team can possibly blow this and allow the Eagles to get into the playoffs? Not even in the head-to-head matchup. But Dallas would have to lose twice to lose this division.
Yo, I'm not expecting us to make the playoffs. In the beginning of the season, I predicted 9-7. So we may go 9-7 and miss the playoffs. We may go 8-8 and miss the playoffs. Of course, I'll be happy.
9-7 wins this division for the Cowboys, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I think it all depends on how everything breaks down. Everything else, like I know
they
I was
got
I
the
heard
Giants
somewhere.
In the mix too.
If they lose to the Eagles, all they have to do is beat the Giants. So 9-7, and if they beat the Eagles, then the Giants would have to because Dallas
like
has a one game lead now. If they beat the Eagles, then the Giants are pretty much done.
Only if the Giants lose to the Jets. If we beat the Eagles and then the Giants beat the Jets, it'll come down to that last game. And if the Giants beat us, we'll be 9-7, and I believe the Giants, they'll take the division.
Yo, see, this is the challenge. Now
you're saying
if the Eagles beat Dallas,
you're saying?
Yeah.
Even if we beat
the Eagles this week, right, we'll have 9 wins, and then the Giants would have to beat the Jets and beat us to take the division.
No, beat the Jets.
I think we're confusing the listeners here.
The bottom line is the Cowboys control their own destiny.
Exactly.
The way Kill is stating it, they do control their own destiny, but right now, if I'm not mistaken, they're a game up on the Giants, right?
Yes, we are. We are.
So I would assume that all they had to do was beat the Eagles and they'd win the division.
No, only if the Jets beat the Giants. That's the only way.
Because if the Giants end up winning that last game, they'd pull into a tie with the Cowboys, but they'd win on the tiebreaker.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, okay. There you go. And by the way, real quick, earlier we were talking about that whole sack thing. When Reggie White got his 21 sack, he did it in 12 games.
And he did it against 2 and 3 cats per play.
Yo, and not only that, just to let you know how great Reggie White was, Reggie White did it at a time, like Narant pointed out, where that most teams average 18 to 20 passes per game, and now that's like the first half.
They tripled him in practice.
Because we got to get to our basketball picks before the season starts. Jimmy, you got? Do you think this everything will fall right for the Eagles to get into the playoffs?
Yo, here's what I think. Here's my prediction. It's going to sound crazy. I think the Eagles are going to make the playoffs. They're actually going to win a game. The city's going to get pumped up, and then they're going to sell the farm.
I just can't see.
I'm going to avoid that scenario at all costs.
I can't see everything happening. Like, I don't even know why the Eagles or the city of Philadelphia or its fans right now would even deserve those chips to fall into that position for where the dream team makes it to the playoffs. Of course I want to see them in the playoffs because, like I said earlier, once you get there, anything can happen. And, of course, like Jimmy said, they're good to win a game, hype us all up, start the Eagles Super Bowl. But there's a lot of people right now. Somebody wrote an article yesterday. I forgot who he writes for, who actually wrote an article pointing out why the Dream Team will be in the Super Bowl. And I'm like, it's a lot that has to happen. Like, I guess it's one of those shock value articles where you put that out there, and then if it ends up happening, you look like a genius.
But look, here's something. Here's
to me right now, he looks like a clown. But
if they did make the playoffs, and like you said, they don't deserve it, but that's a team you don't want to play, a team that pretty much hasn't lived up to what people thought they could the entire season, but still backdoored their way in the playoffs. You don't want to play a team like that because at that point they have nothing to lose.
Yeah, but at the same time, that's been the usual thing at the end of seasons with the Eagles, whether we're good or we're not living up to potential. At the end of the season, the Eagles are usually on some streak, and the talking heads are usually saying, this is a team you don't want to face in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Now, before, there's a reason for that, because they may be on like a 6-game streak, 7-game streak. Like, they're talking that talk about the Eagles right now, and they've won 2 games in a row for the first time all season. And
they
turned
the
ball over 4 times in their last win, so they're still not looking impressive. It's just how they got a couple of defensive breaks during this game.
Hey, I'll tell you one thing. They're looking boring this year. Like, for some reason, the team is not as exciting. They look boring. Shady is playing out of his mind, though. He needs a new touchdown dance because that's fruits. But
I've spent my life hooping on NFL teams that make the playoffs 8-8. And when Arizona beat us because we had a coward at quarterback that year, I was
6-1.
I was livid that we lost to an 8-8 team. I was like, they shouldn't even beat. So just for me, and this is personal, I'm not, I understand that when you get in playoffs, it's a new season and all that. I just don't feel as though we deserve it. I don't, we go.
Were they 8-8, though? They had home field advantage in that game.
Cardinals?
Was it because they won their division?
Yeah, they won their division.
Okay.
And we were a wild card.
Okay.
All right. So now I understand all of this conversation that we are talking right now, now I understand what people in the NFC West go through.
We're sitting here talking about how the Cowboys could possibly win this division at 9-7, and how the Eagles can possibly win this division at 8-8. Like, nobody from the NFC East really deserves to go into the playoffs. So whoever does make it, I really don't want to hear their fans yapping off at the mouth for winning this division, because everybody and their mom shat on the NFC West last year when somebody won the division at 7-9. 7-9, 8-8, 9-7, same thing to me.
It's all the same thing.
Yeah.
It's all the same, huh? Yo, but
like,
I think
a division winner should
9-17,
at least be 11-5.
Wasn't the 9-17 that made it to the bowl before, though? I'm pretty sure it was the 9-17 that made it to the bowl.
Oh, man.
Was it the Cardinals?
Yeah, that is what it is.
Cardinals
that
went
is
to the bowl?
Yeah, they
were
did
they?
Go to
were
the
they
bowl.
8-8, 9-6? They
somewhere
were
somewhere around there. They
around
went
there
to the bowl. I mean,
and they went to
I know the
bowl
Ram. I know the Rams had went to the bowl 9-7 before too. Like,
but that's why I tell you, once you get in, anything can happen.
And a whole new season. It's a whole
so
new season. All that
you can get
in,
and you're facing teams, and Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers both catch the flu. you never know what can happen, but, you know, I stand by my you know, my point, and no, they don't deserve it, but would I like to see it? Hell yeah. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I put a lot of time and effort and even money into this whole Philadelphia Eagles thing, so let's keep
and
it going.
Shout out to Raheem, because he's on Twitter. He hit us up on Twitter and was like, if they make the playoffs, they might be a favorite that first game, which is true because Vegas loves the Eagles. They might make the playoffs and be a favorite. I think it would be interesting. We'll have fun talking about it, though, if that does happen.
I ain't going to lie. Yo, DeSean Jackson, for those that live their sports lives on SportsCenter, he makes it so exciting. Even the talking heads, the pun, and the experts get caught up in that, and that's where the excitement is. But it can be so easily turned off and shut down that because we're not an over-the-top team right now and people have figured that out, it's like we're boring. And that's one of the things that factors into that whole hype machine in Vegas is the fact that in past we had that little llama running, you know, 10 flat hundreds down the sideline. That factors into it.
Right. I'll tell you one thing, though. Regardless of all that, Shady is having a great season, yo. So shout out to Shady. But anyway, let's talk
Shady
some basketball real quick before we get off.
Shady Sanders.
Yeah, pretty much. And our NBA talk, by the way, is brought to you by Stitcher Smart Radio. You can now hear the War Room on Stitcher Smart Radio on your iPhone and your Android phone. And if you have a BlackBerry or Palm, they have apps for that as well. But if you have a BlackBerry or Palm, like I always say, you know, KYS. Let's move on, though. We only got a little bit of time left.
Into our picks. We had a lot of NBA talk to discuss.
Breaking news. Yeah, breaking news. Y'all favorite player, Samuel Dalembert, has signed with the Rockets.
Oh, yeah, he signed with the Rockets. I saw that earlier.
How much did they pay?
You closer to Haiti?
Nah, I don't know.
Yo,
I don't know how much they paid.
Samuel Dalembert has been getting money for a couple of years now, undeservingly so. But anyway,
Just
want to get into the predictions, Dev?
Yeah, let's get into our picks. I mean, we were going to talk about Derrick Rose. Everybody know he signed the 5 years, $94.8 million. Good for him. Kobe's wrist injury.
God bless.
Just ask Jimmy real quick. Jimmy, what do you think that'd do for your Lakers to start the season?
I think Kobe's marrow problem is more interesting than his wrist injury. But the only thing I want to say about Derrick Rose is I appreciate the way he handled his business. He didn't have to hold the press conference to give back to the kids to sign his contract. Anyway, shout out to Derrick Rose. In terms of our predictions, though.
So let's
Steph,
just go.
Let's get to it. Just,
yeah,
I'm
let's
gonna
go
let
division
you go
winners. Let's go. You want me to go? All right.
Well, first.
Atlantic Division. No, I'm going to go the other way. No, I'm going to go with the Atlantic Division because they ain't that special. I got New York because they're back. They're going to win that division, followed by Boston. Philly's going to, you know, in this short season, I think they're going to know how to start out a little better, and they may be a bigger factor than we think. But I got New York, Boston, Philly, Jersey, Toronto bringing up the rear. Central, I got Chicago winning that. I got Indiana making it a little interesting. I think Indiana has a pretty good team. Then I got Milwaukee, Detroit, Cleveland. Southeast Division, I got Miami winning that. I got Orlando, but I think I might go Atlanta, Orlando, Charlotte, then Washington. Northwest Division, I got OKC, then Portland, then Denver, Utah, then Minnesota. Pacific Division, I still got the Lakers winning that, then the Clippers, Golden State, Phoenix, and Sacramento. Southwest Division, I got Dallas winning it, then Memphis, San Antonio, Houston, and New Orleans bringing up the rear. My Eastern Conference Finals is going to be between Miami and Chicago. Boston's going to be too old to stick with any of these teams. New York is not going to be playing enough defense. Tyson Chandler's going to get hurt because he's the only one out there balling on the defensive end. In the Western Conference, old dogs, man. I still got the Lakers, but I think I might go Lakers. I was going to say OKC, man. I got the Lakers in Memphis, even though Memphis is a point. They still need a point guard to me. I got the Lakers.
Yo, did you say where you had Denver? Where you had Denver at? I didn't hear you mention Denver at all.
Yeah, I got Denver coming third in the Northwest Division.
Yeah, I'm third. Okay, no doubt. All right.
So I got the Lakers and Memphis in the Western Conference Finals. And then I got the Lakers and the Heat. battling for the NBA championship. And if everything stays like it is, I actually got the Heat winning the NBA Finals this year.
Not one, not two.
Not two.
The Austin.
Not three.
You want to give us your predictions? You can give us everything, or you can give us, you know, whatever you want to give us.
Yeah. I'm going to go sleeper. I'm gonna go with the Celtics winning the Atlantic Division. I'm going to go with the Knicks coming in second, Sixers third, Jersey, and then Raptors at the bottom. Who even plays for the Raptors? Central
and Louis Scola.
Central, not Houston, the Raptors.
Not the Rockets, the Raptors.
Raptors.
Yeah. My bad. DeMar DeRozan.
He looks like a Raptor.
Central, I got the Bulls, I got the Pacers, the Bucks, Pistons, and the Cavs. Rounding it out last. My bad, Kyrie, but it is what it is. Southeast, I got the Magic, the Heat, the Hawks, the Wizards, and the Bobcats, and Mike Jordan's worst nightmare. I got Northwest Division, I got OKC. I got OKC, the Portland Trail Blazers, Utah, and rounded out by the Wolves. I don't think they're going to get any better.
Now, you skipped Denver. You skipped Denver.
Denver.
Everybody's Denver pooping above. On Denver, yo.
Denver. I got OKC, Portland, and I got Denver third. I got Denver third.
And you're talking
Man, just give us your playoffs. We're running out of time, man.
Lakers, Lakers, Clippers, Warriors, Suns, and Kings. Then I got Mavs, Grizzlies, Rockets, San Antonio, and the Hornets. In the playoffs,
conference finals.
I got the Bulls and the Heat, and I got the Mavs and the Lakers. I got the Lakers versus the Heat, and I got the Bull tying his pop.
Kobe getting his six.
Yeah, Kobe.
All right, Kill. If you can make it any way faster than that, can you give us your pick?
Oh yeah, it's already there. There you go. I got the Celtics winning the Atlantic Division. I got the Bulls winning the Central. I got the Heat winning the Southeast. I have the Thunder winning the Northwest. I have the Clippers winning the Pacific. Only because I just don't think Mike Brown is in Kobe's wrist and losing Odom. Like, I would like the Lakers to win that division, but I think the Clippers going to win it. And Southwest, I got the Mavericks winning the division. The Pacific division might be one of the weakest divisions in the league, FYI. Heat, yeah, because outside of two L.A. teams, everybody else is cabbage. Conference winners, I got the Heat over the Bulls, and then I have the OKC Thunder over the San Antonio Spurs in the Western Conference Finals, with the Heat beating the Thunder in the Finals.
Yo, he said the Spurs. Yo, Spurs real quick, in the Atlantic, I have the Knicks. I actually have the Sixers finishing in second. Then the Celtics, then the Nets, then the Raptors, the Central, the Bulls, of course. Indiana, I think, is going to have a good season coming second. The Bucks, Detroit, Cleveland, Miami. I was going to say Orlando, but at this point I'm going to go Atlanta, then Orlando, then the Wizards, then the Bobcats, and last, because Jordan's the worst owner, manager in the history of the league, Oklahoma City Thunder in the Northwest in first, then after that Portland, then Utah, Minnesota, and I actually have Denver falling in the last.
Dang.
Pacific Division, I have the Lakers.
Talking about us
falling
on Denver.
I know.
He's setting that up.
Then the Clippers, then the Warriors, Phoenix, and Sacramento. Southwest, I have Dallas, then Memphis, Houston, then San Antonio. I actually think the Rockets will, you know, especially with the acquisition of Samuel Dalembert, then the Hornets.
They got school.
Well, I know you guys didn't give all these picks, but Coach of the Year, I got Frankie Vogel from Indiana, Kevin Durant for MVP. It's like, no, let me stop all that. But anyway, in terms of the playoffs.
We'll do that next week.
Yeah,
really
in terms of the playoffs, I also have the Bulls and the Heat, meaning in the finals. I think the Heat will go to the chip again. In the Western Conference, I see OKC and the Lakers playing. And I actually think OKC will beat the Lakers. I think it's going to be OKC and the Heat. And then the finals, I have a seven-game series. I hate to say it, but I think the Heat may win the whole thing. And a lot of this is based upon the fact that it's a short season. So
if it goes seven, if it goes seven, then that's too much pressure for certain.
Well, I'm not thinking about LaFleur or James. I'm thinking about they got D Wade on their squad. And see, the thing about it is, I had the Lakers.
Cole. And Norris Cole. Don't forget about
Norris
Cole.
Cole. Shout out to Norris Cole, the War Room favorite. But yo, I thought about the Lakers and Heat playing, but then I thought about how Mike Brown is like LeBron's son, so LeBron may tell him to bench Kobe for the finals. He may sit Kobe for the whole finals after LeBron tells him to. So, you know.
Because he's probably still longing to get that Heat job eventually.
Say, Mike, won't you sit Kobe down? Okay.
Well, going back to Kill's picks, I can see how the Celtics could fairly easily win the Atlantic Division. And like Jimmy said, that has everything to do with it being a short season. Because the Celtics in the last couple of years have been that team that kind of fizzled out late because of their age. So with the lockout and the extra time that they actually had to prepare, the Celtics could fire out of the gates, you know, get a good record, going to the playoffs with a good seed, and then fizzle out.
We have a question for Kill on Twitter, and I also have the same question for Kill. Raheem says the Spurs ain't going nowhere, like, near the championship game. What do you see in the Spurs? Is it because you live in Texas, Kill? Like, what's going on with the Spurs?
Oh, nah. Like, I see the Spurs being, like, a fourth or fifth seed, but then, like, upsetting cats in the playoffs because they still have Duncan, who's had rest. They have Manu. They have Parker. And, I mean, those are the three main staples. And I think with the shortened season and Duncan's rest, I think they're going to surprise people. They won't win a division. They're not going to win, like, 60 games. But I think come playoff time, they might even be a sixth seed and upset the third seed and then, you know, make a little run.
And I just want all the Miami Heat fans, all their fraudulent fans, because most of their fans are frauds anyway, that if they do win the chip, I'm still going to clown y'all because y'all can get an asterisk because it was a short season. I'm already saying it right now.
The Heat shouldn't even try to win this year because they know they're going to get a lot of flack. They should just throw the season like, man, it's not even right. We got time.
And the funny thing is, no matter what they do in the regular season, it's, like, really irrelevant at this point. Like, their season doesn't even start to the playoffs.
It was irrelevant last year. I mean, and they made a good showing because they actually made a better showing in the playoffs than they made in the regular season because they had a lot of bad losses in the regular season.
Yeah, they did. They did. So, I mean, most of the team made a good showing in the playoffs. Some of them didn't make a good showing in the playoffs. A fraud. But, you know, it is what it is.
Chris Bosh made a good showing in the playoffs.
Chris Bosh, no comment. I'm going to leave that alone. Shout out to all our transgender listeners out there.
Christina came out balling while y'all was talking all that smack about him. He was like, look, if this dude going to act like a punk, I'm going to take
her
on my shoulders.
Talking about her.
Yeah. I mean, Christina has the will always be known. I mean, Christina's the first female to play in the league, so never mind. You know,
but I'm going to keep it 100. She's not better than Brittany Griner.
You honestly think Brittany Griner could play in the league, though? Seriously, real talk.
No.
You think she could play in the league?
Absolutely not.
Let me ask you guys this before we go out. Do you think there's ever been a female you've seen that could possibly play in the league? I'm not saying be a star, but just play in the league. Ever been any female you ever seen?
It was a chick that crossed Sebastian Telfair up pretty something.
Dev, you think there's ever been a chick that could have played in the league?
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say the closest to it probably would have had to have been, like, Cheryl Miller and...
She a dude anyway, but Kill.
Say that again.
You think it's ever been a chick you've seen play ball that could have played, possibly played in the league, got a roster spot?
No.
I mean, I say that, but then I do see chicks that I think are better than Ira Newell.
There you go. Cynthia Cooper is better than Ira Newell. I don't care what nobody says.
Nah, but Cynthia Cooper,
she would have been too small
for
the league, though. How's she going to get her shot off?
Yeah, she's going to get her shot off against top, you know, notch NBA point guard.
Hey, she don't have to. Muggsy Bogues and Robert Pack got their shot off. Anyway, it's time to get out of here, y'all. Thanks for joining us in the war room this evening, good people. Special thanks to everyone who participated, everybody in the chat room, Facebook, and Twitter that, you know, gave us a shout out. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to help us wrap up 2011 in style. We'll be doing our second annual The Year As We Saw It show by recapping the biggest sports stories of 2011. Be there with us to take out the old and bring in the new. Have a Merry Christmas, everybody. And if you don't celebrate Christmas, then have a Merry Christmas anyway. So until next week, we'll see y'all on the internet somehow, some way.
Peace.